The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Big Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I am your host. This is a Monday mailbag. Monday, May 25th. Reminder, download, subscribe, rate, and review. If you want a question for the Super Friends, can be about anything. If you want it to be featured in a future mailbag, we'll be doing them all throughout the offseason because you guys have great questions. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast and we will answer it. It can be about a team, player, an offseason, Breach's preferred swaddling method, whatever you want. You can ask us about anything. How Sean cuts his own hair. Maybe talk about Ryan Wilson's life crisis. We'll get to that in a little bit. First, and by the way, we'll also get to, after the break, we have an interview with Seahawks offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer. Love Shoddy. Can we call him Shoddy? I guess I can call him Shoddy. I asked him about Pete Prisco and his list, and he says that Pete is, quote, experienced, which made me laugh. And then he actually flipped the interview on me and started asking me about NC State quarterbacks. So we'll get to that in a minute. Instead.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
No, never mind. I won't say it. Did you bring up Shane Montgomery, the greatest NC State quarterback of all time?
I did not.
Jeez, Brinson.
Well, so he coached Rivers of the Chargers, and he has Russell now. And so he's like, who's the greatest NC State quarterback?
Wait a second. I think Russell, what did he say at the Super Bowl, John, when he was asked, when he brought up independently where he went to college?
Well, that was
he did not say North Carolina State. That's all I'm going to say.
Weird.
Whole pack that of Badgers.
Weird. That was not.
But it's actually interesting. So we talked about he was like, one of the things we'll talk about, and you can hear it after the break, but he's like, Russ, people don't realize it, but Russ like holds grudges, but he does it like because of the way he talks publicly. Like, that Aaron Rodgers holds grudges, and you can like he just makes you aware of like which grudges he has, but like Russell Wilson does it in a chip on your shoulder kind of way, but he doesn't make it obvious in public.
Who does he have grudges against?
Well, Tom O'Brien for one.
He went in the third round. I'm sure he has plenty of grudges.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always, it's just like Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? Like you're coming up with stuff to motivate you. Anyway.
Who has more grudges? Russell Wilson or Will Brinson?
Will Brinson, for sure.
But Brinson does the Rogers school of thought where everyone knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm passive aggressive about it. And I'll let you know.
You should just have a mustache like Aaron Rodgers. Don't have a beard. Just have a mustache.
Should I get a mustache? My buddy Nathan, had a beard. He never does facial hair, but he had a beard rocking for quarantine. And he was like hanging out at his house, listening to Frank Zappa. And next thing you know, he'd shaved his beard into a mustache. And
he was still doing more than listening to Frank Zappa.
Is that a
wacky tobacco reference?
I don't think that's the case. Not, certainly not in this state, maybe in California or Colorado.
I don't know. If you're going to hippie it up, I figured maybe that he was having.
Zappa's not really. Anyway. Tangent time. Let's get to the mailbag. So.
A Memorial Day mailbag.
Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. I hope your holiday went great.
It's going great. This is Monday.
Yeah, that's right. But you know what? We don't get any days off because we are constantly working, even during the off season. Nobody works harder than the four of us.
I've seen a couple people work harder. Yeah, it's like we're up there. You know, we're in like the top 500,000.
Hey, I'll tell you what. We provide a good bang for our buck. That's for sure.
Yeah, you can't beat the price.
Sure can't. All right. Worth your time, especially for free. Andrew Dozier writes on Apple Podcasts. I will admit I'm relatively new to keeping up with the NFL, not college football, but is it a possibility that the DeAndre Hopkins trade looks bad because other teams knew that Bill O'Brien didn't get along with him and knowing that he would eventually dump him squeezed most of his trade leverage away? My assumption is that O'Brien is not an idiot they just hired off the streets. I would presume he has a working knowledge of the game, lest no one would hire him even in the most basic role. Not every coach player pair is perfect, reminding me of the Patriot way here, but is this actually a possibility? Again, I'm here to be learned. I myself am probably an idiot. I like Andrew.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, everyone thought that the Steelers got robbed on the Antonio Brown trade. It was a third round pick. Right?
They got Deontay Johnson for it.
So, yeah, on the surface, right.
So Pete Prisco was on during his top 100 list, and he had DeAndre Hopkins at 31, which is really low for a guy who could arguably be the best receiver in football. He's behind Michael Thomas, obviously, and he's behind Chris Godwin, too, and behind Julio Jones. Pete keeps saying this, and like Pete knows a lot of people around the league, and people like to gossip to Pete because Pete doesn't report anything. He just like, he has this crazy well of gossip. And he doesn't even care about scoops. He just wants gossip. And Pete keeps bringing up Hopkins' knee. I just wonder, this thing is like so obviously one-sided that maybe there's more to it and maybe we'll find out that Hopkins is, starting to maybe he's already peaked and he's going to be declining. I mean, we'll see. I don't personally think so. But I do believe that Bill O'Brien, by virtue of wearing the two hats, the coach and the GM, has hurt himself in contract negotiations, in trade talks, and leverage because he allows his feelings as a coach to flow over into his approach as a GM. And I think that's something that Bill Belichick has been excellent at, sort of separating church and state. And I don't think Bill O'Brien's very good at it right now.
I would just say on Bill O'Brien, or first on DeAndre Hopkins, if he is playing on a knee that's going downhill, that's deteriorating, he didn't show it last season because three of his final five games, he went over 115 yards receiving. And if you have a bad knee, it usually gets worse as the season goes on, not better. So if I'm the Cardinals, I am absolutely thrilled. And Prince, I think you hit the nail on the head here. Like, Bill O'Brien has done a great job as a coach. They've made the playoffs in four of the past 5 years, despite all the crazy things he's done. But he is the general manager. He's killed himself as the general manager. He is the guy in Madden who loses like 51-0, making these crazy trades. Some of them go through, but most of them don't because not even Madden would accept them. I think people put the DeAndre Hopkins trade into the Madden. And Madden was like, nah, you can't do that. That's just, that you're not getting
it. I did that. I put it into Madden and it was rejected. Yeah, it was rejected.
Like, not even a video game would accept this trade. And look, it's not just Hopkins. Remember, he traded away Jadeveon Clowney. Do we even remember who he got from the Seahawks for that? Jacob Martin, Barkevious Mingo, not exactly making up for Clowney. They also got a third round pick in that deal. And then the Tunsil Stills deal looks a little okay now, but he still gave up two first round picks and a second round pick. Like, that's a lot of compensation. And then to turn around and give Laremy Tunsil $22 million a year, which is $4 million more than any other offensive lineman has ever made per year in NFL history. So they blew past, Tunsil, you obviously had to pay him, but giving him that much money seemed a little insane. So just Bill O'Brien, the general manager, has been making all these insane decisions.
How much are they paying on David Johnson's deal?
A lot.
Okay, I didn't know how they split that up. So if they're taking on that contract as well.
Yeah, well, they didn't restructure. They are taking it on, if I remember correctly. Because that was the assumption, is the Cardinals must be paying it, but they're not paying it.
So the thing on Laremy Tunsil, and this is sort of where, like, when we talk about Bill O'Brien, when that trade happened, Joel Corey, among other people, pointed out that Bill O'Brien not negotiating a contract extension with Laremy Tunsil before the trade happened, or like not working something out, was a mistake because that was going to allow Laremy Tunsil to basically say, here's how much money I want, and Bill O'Brien to say, okay, dude, here it is. Laremy Tunsil didn't have an agent. He negotiated $22 million a year from the Houston Texans when the next highest paid tackle is $16.5 million. He got $22 million without an agent. Why can't I work for the Houston Texans? Like, you're just getting handed cash. Like, you just, hey, Bill, I want $22 million. He's like, oh, sure. That's $6 million more than the going market rate for tackles. But that sounds great, Laramie. Let's do it. I mean, he gave up so much for Tunsil that he was forced into a position where he just had to pay him whatever
Tunsil he wanted. Tunsil had all the leverage.
Yeah.
Tunsil took that team hostage because you can't give up two first-round picks and let him leave that quickly. You have to pay him or you got taken to the woodshed in the trade. So it's just, it's insane.
He got on the giving up first two rounders and on the back end with the deal. So that was a lose.
He gave up a second round pick for Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I think the takeaway is that because we make fun of Bill O'Brien, but we mostly make fun of them, some of it for the on-field stuff, but they go to the playoffs and they win football games. It's mostly the front office stuff and the apparent power struggles from the outside looking in, with Bill O'Brien and whoever the general manager of the day is.
If you take away the 4-12 season where Watson tore his ACL, and I mean that's
fine. They went 3-3 with Watson that year.
Yeah, I'm just saying if you take away like that's his only season without
that's with the year less, by the way where he started Tom Savage and figured out at halftime that Deshaun Watson as a rookie should probably be in the game.
I know. It's unbelievable. But like that's his only season with less than 9 wins in his coaching career. You take that away and he's 16 games above 500. Like. He's got 54, was won 54% of his games. And I think has 3 division titles. Like he wins games.
And if the argument is that he didn't get along with the player and the player didn't get along with the coach, I mean, that's why you're supposed to have a GM there where you force the guys to work together because it's not, if they haven't gotten along for the last 3 years, it hasn't affected the on-field product. If you just look at his numbers and you look at how.
It's not necessarily the GM's job to make them get along, but the GM will get a better deal than what this GM got because the coach, who's the same person, was mad about
the
relationship.
And my point being is that the coach should just be able to work through it because, it has not affected the on-field product from Hopkins. And if you look at what percentage of the Texans' offense he's been the last 3 years, even if they didn't get along, they had a feud, it was working just fine in terms of football. You don't have to be best friends with everyone on your team. You know, it can be a professional relationship where you work together and that's it.
Yeah. Now, I don't have any recollections other than Hopkins balling out before Deshaun Watson got there after he got hurt of him. Do we know of any reports where he was angry about having people short hop on the ball, Brock Osweiler throwing balls 40 feet over his head or anything? Because I don't remember hearing anything about that.
I mean, I think generally speaking, he was probably.
But do you remember anything like specifically, there's a report that Dre Hopkins is pissed.
He said something last month about it, but that was the first time he said
it. But he didn't say it in 2017.
He dealt with some really bad quarterback situations, performed really well, and didn't publicly complain about it.
He said this last month, if I could do it with Brock Osweiler, I could do it with anybody.
That's not even true.
Exactly. No, and he's doing it after he left the team, too. So I'm completely fine with it.
And one thing with Bill O'Brien, we all agree, that he has gotten this team to the playoffs, but I think this is really a test year because the Hopkins trade is the craziest thing he's ever done. And the Texans have also been in a division that just hasn't been competitive. Like that's a reason they've been able to get there. Jacksonville's had one good year in the past 5 years. Andrew Luck has retired in 2019, missed the entire 2017 season, missed like half the 2015 season. And that the Titans were the Titans, with Mike Mularkey. You knew they weren't going to do anything. Somehow they willed their way to 9-7, but they weren't just very competitive. And so this year, though, it's completely different. You have the Titans could win the division. You have the Colts who could win the division. And so this is the year where I think Bill O'Brien, if he wins it this year, I'm never questioning him again. That's all I'm going to say. But if he doesn't, then I think it's fair to question every move he's ever made.
And look, I said this at the time, and it's apples and oranges, I guess. But if Bill Belichick did this, we'd be like, well, what does he know about about DeAndre Hopkins that we don't? He'd be like, well, maybe it's just, the year too early thing. I almost wonder if Bill O'Brien thinks he's pulling a Belichick here, but in reality, he's 3 years too early. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And by the way, this is another thing to watch with Houston. Since 2016, they have just 3 first round picks that they've acquired. Now, obviously they traded for Laramie Tunsil. And then who else did they get for a first round pick? Did they go with another one? Am I crazy?
Well, they gave up 2 picks for Watson.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the Watson. So they have Will Fuller, 2016, Deshaun Watson, 2017, Titus Howard, 2019. Like, I know you got Tunsil, and that's great. But at a certain point, a lack of first round picks and an infusion of talent can cause a deterioration that we sort of don't see coming. I don't think it'll happen because they have Watson, but you know.
Especially when you have to pay the quarterback suddenly big money, and then that limits your ability to go sign free agents, and that you need to draft players in order to keep a good.
Like, I feel like that's sort of what happened with the Rams last year. And they still won 9 games, but you know, they missed the, I mean, like, that's what I'm, like, I think the Texans could go 9-7.
And Watson's better than Goff too, so yeah. When he does get paid, they will be able to survive. Like, Watson's already dragged them to the playoffs with the worst offensive line that, like, he, yeah. And then, like, Ryan's gonna make fun of me because I've been saying they could still make the playoffs, but I really do think with Watson, they're always going to be a fringe playoff team at worst.
He has been sacked 106 times the last 2 years. That is a concern.
72 or 62 2 years ago, so I think it got better last year. I remember that used to be the talking point last offseason. They drafted offensive linemen. So
it was 62 last year, or 2018, 44 last year. Yeah, I mean, they improved the offensive line.
Howard, they got Laremy Tunsil, and they got Max Sharping. So they have some young offensive linemen that, to Sean's point, if they can protect them, yeah, I guess you always have a chance.
All right. So, I mean, yeah, Bill, a year from now, we're like, Bill O'Brien's a genius. Yeah, that's why, Andrew. We're all idiots, too. The Josh Rosen situation from also Why Are All the Names Taken via Apple Podcast. Okay. What happens if Ryan Fitzpatrick gets hurt and then the Finns put in Josh Rosen, but he plays really well? That's not a bad problem to have.
Here's something that was in the Miami Herald last week. I think our buddy Adam Beasley was had one of the bylines. Chad O'Shea, the offensive coordinator who just sort of got fired in January. It would seem to come out of nowhere. Obviously, the first-year guy, he came over with Brian Flores from New England, where I think he was the linebackers coach, secondaries coach. He was a defensive assistant. But according to some of the people they spoke with in the organization, his defense was so complex and so much based on the way that Patriots are doing it with Tom Brady, who'd been there forever, that it just wasn't working with the young players in Miami. And he wasn't coaching it very well, according to people that talked to Beasley and the rest of the guys at the byline. So the takeaway is that maybe Josh Rosen is really good. He was set up to fail last year in that system where he played, I don't know how many games he played before they finally benched him and turned to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Because there was one of the people in the story said that Chad O'Shea would go to Flores and say, so-and-so doesn't know the offense. And whether you're talking about Josh Rosen or wide receiver, I don't know. But the point is that, maybe Josh Rosen wasn't given an opportunity. Maybe he isn't terrible. So the long answer is, if he goes in and plays well, you trade him for a second round pick.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Yeah. Would there be any temptation if he plays well to trade Tua? It probably depends how well, right? That he plays.
That next year's year three. So there's only a year and the fifth year option with Josh Rosen left. So that's also something to consider.
I think that Miami is so, like, clearly they wanted Tua all along. I mean, I think they would have taken Burrow if they had the first overall pick, but they wanted two all along. They got him at five. I think they're all in on this guy. And the problem with the Rosen thing is like Tua is, you know, like he's creating interest in the Miami Dolphins, and he's selling, if there are tickets next year, you know, he's selling tickets. He's selling jerseys. He's very popular down there, and Dolphins fans think he's the savior. So I would be surprised if Stephen Ross would sign off on let's trade Tua instead of Josh Rosen.
Or like even Josh Rosen going to game. I think the Dolphins would put Ray Finkel at starting quarterback before they let Josh Rosen on the field. If Ryan Fitzpatrick got hurt, they're absolutely putting Tua in. Like they wouldn't even think about putting Rosen in.
If they decide to redshirt Tua this year,
but
because of
think
his
about how lowly they thought of Josh Rosen last year. They traded a second round pick to Arizona. That's a lot of compensation. So this is when you get someone like that, you say, hey, we need to see what he can do on the field because we need to know if we're going to keep him. They put him out there for three games and he gets benched. So
yeah,
like,
but I just said that.
No, I understand the complex offense part, but even if you're in a complex offense, like he only completed 53% of his passes. That is
if the offensive coordinator thinks you don't know the offense, I'm not saying Chad O'Shea said that about Josh Rosen, but just for the sake of discussion, that would be a reason to be like, all right, we have to eat the second round pick.
Right.
Although if you're tanking for two, I don't know why you wouldn't leave him out there.
But if Rosen struggled in Arizona, struggled in Miami, maybe Rosen just has trouble picking up offenses. Maybe
I don't know. I mean, maybe they brought in Chan Gailey. Chan Gailey's worked with Ryan Fitzpatrick, incidentally. So that, who knows? Maybe things go better, but maybe he has more experience working with young quarterbacks than like,
real quick, the crazy thing about Chad O'Shea getting fired because his offense was too complex is that his last game was against the Patriots, and he was running a Patriots-style offense, and it diced up the Patriots, and they basically cost New England, you know, home field advantage, or at least a first-round bye, by upsetting them in that Week 17 game. And they scored 20 or more points over the final 7 weeks of the season. So it's crazy.
How about
I agree with Breach's larger point, though, that we're not going to see Rosen. I don't see – unless Tua gets hurt, I don't see any reason why they would even risk a situation like this where Josh Rosen does play well and we've never seen Tua, and then they are put in this spot. I think Josh Rosen is only going to play in the preseason.
What if they trade him to the Patriots for a fourth-round pick and he wins the Super Bowl?
But if they come out and say we're going to let Tua sit for 2020, then – clearly, Josh.
I think you have to be upfront with that, though, and say that heading into the season.
I think there needs to be a medical situation for Tua to do that. Otherwise, like, fans are going to be pretty chippy.
Oh yeah, but I mean, every year in August, we see guys go on the IR for thigh injuries. You know,
as we said, Bill O'Brien started Tom Savage. You know, Brian Flores could start Ryan Fitzpatrick and then be like, oh, whoops.
Yeah.
I got Tua. Who knows? Okay. Next question from Justify Centuries. Do you guys think that the Jets did a good job this season? I guess he needs off season. I think that Denzel Mims out of Baylor, the wide receiver in the second round, was a steal. Do you? I will point out that somebody, I don't know if it was an Apple podcast or an email to me or a DM, and I think I replied to them. I hope I did. We're lamenting. They're like, I love the podcast. Listen all the time. Was really pumped to hear what you guys would say about the Jets. And you like they treated him like a speed bump. So let's give.
Yeah, that was one of the Apple podcasters. I read that too.
Yeah. So let's
20 minutes on the Bills and no time on the Jets.
Yeah. So let's give a little, I've been meaning to mention that previously. So let's flesh out the Jets and whether
Josh Allen, I think, has a really good chance to win the MVP. That was my Bills joke.
I was like, what?
Put it on Twitter.
There it is.
So. I really like what the Jets did this offseason. I think, oh my God, how am I drawing a blank on their GM's name who came from Philadelphia? Joe Douglas. Whew, jeez. Recorded this on a Friday. So, you know.
Drinking too many iced coffee beers.
Yeah. I actually had a slingshot, cold brew before we started.
What is that? I thought you were having sober quarantine.
No. No. I haven't been sober in quarantine yet.
That explains the shirt.
The shirt is fantastic. It's a Peter Millar Raleigh Country Club shirt, baby.
He said Peter Millar like all of us would know. I have a Peter Millar shirt, but I wouldn't throw out a brand name like that. My God.
I will beg Peter Millar to hook a dude up with a little sponsorship.
Who's Peter Millar? Is he related to Kevin Millar?
He's actually not a real person, I don't think.
Oh. Kevin Millar is.
Anyway, Joe Douglas, I thought did a really good job. Like there's a lot to fix on that offense. And I liked the idea of sort of doing what Buffalo did 2 years before, I guess. You say, we got a young quarterback. He needs protection. We're going to beef up the offensive line through some low-cost free agent signings. And then they went out and supplemented it by using their first-round pick on Mekhi Becton. And for me, the Jets needed to figure out a way to get an offensive lineman and a wide receiver. And I wouldn't have minded if they'd taken Judy or Lamb in the first round and then tried to come back and get a lineman. But I think they read the room right in the draft and took Becton in the first round, and then were able to get Mims in the second round. That was a big plus for them. I like LaMichael Pirine as a fourth round player. Frank Gore is going to ruin Le'Veon Bell's fantasy purposes, but they have enough talent there at the running back position to sort of take the burden off Sam Darnold. I am surprised at how few people are expecting or predicting or projecting any kind of leap from Sam Darnold. Like this, he's not that far removed from being an elite quarterback prospect. He just got freaking mono last year.
Sam Darnold's good.
Yes.
Go ahead, John.
The other thing I was going to add is even if they didn't make any of these huge flashy signings, we have to remember that that's what they did a year ago. And they, like CJ Mosley, for example, I like that signing. He only played in 2 games. So that's almost going to be like an extra addition, even though he didn't come in this offseason. If you get CJ Mosley of 2016 to 2018, that defense, which was already really good by the advanced metrics, is going to get even better. So they didn't need to go out and spend a ton of money because they did that a year ago, whether it was Le'Veon Bell or CJ Mosley. They just didn't get the kind of production that we would assume from those players.
Mike Maccagnan spent a ton of money in free agency multiple times, and it didn't ever work out very well for him. I think people are like quick to kind of dismiss Quinnen Williams too. I mean, he didn't have a great first year, but like, he's a young dude. I mean, he could have a breakout season in 2020.
Look, in August 2018, he didn't even know if he was going to be a starter at Alabama. So he is extremely young. When he was at the draft, he had braces on at the draft. Yeah, he didn't have a great year, but he's 22.
Yep, 22.
He's 23 yet. Yep. Yeah, he's gonna be really good.
I thought he was fine too. He didn't flash, but he didn't flash
like he did at Alabama, and people are like, oh my God, what happened? Yeah, he's playing against guys who are a lot better.
Yeah, I mean,
I was actually just looking through my draft grades. The Jets ranked ninth in terms of the ninth best draft class when I had to do that thing at the end of post draft.
They added Ashton Davis out of Cal, Sean's guy. Bryce Hall, I thought was like maybe my favorite day three pick overall.
They added Braden Mann, who was my favorite sixth or seventh round pick. He's a punter.
You know what's funny?
He's going to play for the team for a long time. You get a guy in sixth or seventh round that's going to be on your team for 10 years. That's a steal.
I was talking to, like a TV reporter that covers Texas A&M out of Texas, obviously. And he asked me what I thought about Braden Mann before the draft.
Oh my God.
And you said call breach.
I said call breach. I was like, I don't know what Braden's going to do. But this draft class actually is legit. Like, they signed a couple guys, offensive linemen during the free agency, and we're like, that's a step in the right direction. And we were like, well, maybe they'll draft a receiver at 11. But they needed more help at offensive line. They got it, Mekhi Becton. And Denzel Mims, to the original question, I do think it's a steal in the second round.
Yeah.
There's some concerns that maybe he won't be ready to go right away, but who cares?
I think the funniest thing, and you kind of just hit on it, Ryan, is that they literally went out and signed every second tier offensive lineman that was on the market. They're like, we're not going to blow all our money on one guy. We're going to go out and get a Connor McGovern, a George Fant, Alex Lewis, Greg Van Roten. They just went out. Just beefed up the depth on their offensive line. They're like, someone's going to work there. We're just going to throw as many things on the wall as we can and hope something sticks. And obviously, Mekhi Becton was big. And I thought the Pierre Desir, which is something I think I've mentioned multiple times this offseason, I couldn't believe the Colts let him go. Like, that's huge in the secondary. Their secondary is so much better. And I think my biggest issue with the Jets, though, because they have had a fantastic offseason, is their schedule is just brutal this year. And that's why I don't really see them being a playoff team. You just look at their first three games at Buffalo, play the 49ers, and at Colts. You know, that is, it wouldn't be shocking if they come out of the gate 0-3. And if you do that, you know, you're in trouble.
Yeah. The way that they played last year, I think people sort of like, so the Atlanta Falcons, everybody's like, they finished 6-2 down the stretch. They can win 14 games in 2020. It's like, well, the Jets finished 6-2 down the stretch too. Like, that's sort of, I don't think enough people are given that credit. Like, that's a strong close of the season. And, you know, when you look
The Steelers and Duck Hodges.
They did. They beat the Bills in Buffalo.
They
lost at the Bengals, of course, famously. They throttled the Raiders.
How did they lose to the Bengals? Did Danny Dalton play that game? He must have played that game, right, Breach?
They beat the Bills. The Bills were resting their starters just to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. Because the Bills were locked into that spot.
But Sam Darnold, actually, it's funny. I rewatched the Steelers-Jets game just the other day, the defense. And TJ Watt destroyed. That offensive line is so bad in New York. And Sam Darnold didn't play great in that game, but he still found ways to make plays. He had a couple really good throws. And the takeaway is the offensive line sucks. And I think that's what they addressed this offseason. And I think if the offensive line's better, Sam Darnold, we can expect, will be a lot better. And I can't imagine Le'Veon Bell plays worse.
Yeah. I mean, I just think this is a team that by the way, the schedule, moving the NFL.com schedules is just killing me. Like, I cannot function.
Wait, what's wrong?
The NFL.com, we talked about.
They revamped their entire website.
I can't believe they didn't consult Will Brinson before.
They haven't loaded up all the old sites onto the new look.
No, they're not doing it. You have to go to the team page to get, like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, it's driving me nuts. Like that, like,
I will, in Brinson's defense, when I, like, search for player stats, now you have to click two extra buttons to try to get to the player stats that you're trying to find. I'm like, what are you doing? Why does the font need to be 55? I'm 100 years old. I can read 12-point font. You don't need the font to be so large.
We're complaining about websites, ESPN revamped their, like, if you do, like, team stats and, like, you know, total defense, yards and all that, and it's fine, except they removed like the ranking numbers. So if you want to like count like this team in the middle of the pack, if they're ranked 16th or 17th, you literally have to count by hand because the left hand column, they got
I wouldn't know that because I get all my team stats from CBS.
Yeah, I would never go to ESPN.com. Who would do that?
The big takeaway is that,
Sean's a traitor. Else
CBS. No, I'm thrashing ESPN. What are you guys? Opposition research. Come on, guys.
Sounds like a politic.
So do we feel like we got the Jets covered there? I think the Jets can win the division. I think people.
Yeah. Well, when we were doing on the HQ show, the odds, they had the like most enticing odds where you could buy into them being the long.
It's like 7 or 8 to 1 or something. Yeah.
What's the over under? William Hill? Do we know?
Ryan's
7.5.
Ryan's famous question. What's the over under? I know you don't have it in front of you, but what is it?
Well, I do have the William Hill odds in front of me in case you guys would like to know them.
6.5.
Would you like to know them?
I think it's 7.5, isn't it?
7.5 would be my guess.
Their Super Bowl odds are 100 to 1.
Over under wins, please.
So when you say in front of you, you mean like not in front of you?
No, I mean I have to scroll down through all the other odds. I could give you the division odds, but you didn't want that. You want the
What are the division odds?
7 to 1.
The division odds are plus 750. Which are the same as the Dolphins. The Bills are plus 130.
See, that's wrong. The Jets are a better football team than the Dolphins.
Exactly. The
odds are right, Brinson. I just want to be clear to everyone. You're saying that it shouldn't be that.
I'm saying that they are incorrectly priced.
All right. Well, you should make a lot of money.
Go place your bet.
The Dolphins.
Did we get the win total yet, Rich?
No, it's not right.
Are you using an actual scroll? Like what's happening?
Down on like the keyboard. Like, the win total.
Is it like Sanskrit?
Over under. Well, I would give it to you, but you keep interrupting me. The win total.
We're trying to filibuster for you.
Thank you. The over under is 6.5.
Yes.
But the over is juice, so it's -120. The under is +100, even money.
I like that over a lot.
Yeah, that team could win. I mean, if you told me the team went 9-7, that meant everything went right for them, I feel like, right?
Yeah. I mean, but again, I mentioned the opening stretch. There's also a 3-game stretch where they play the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Patriots.
Yeah.
That's pretty brutal. They end the season with the Seahawks, Rams, and Patriots. It's 3 of their final 4 games.
Are we sure?
I mean, the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, are we sure? But like, that's the interesting. Like, this is one of those schedules where I think you look at it, like, are we sure the Seahawks, Rams, Browns and Patriots are going to be good? That's their final 4 teams. Like those 4
Seahawks
teams
are because they're my Super Bowl team.
The game's in Seattle, and Seattle doesn't lose to Eastern Time Zone teams.
There it is.
And they have to go to LA.
Wait a second, Sean, you just skipped over the qualification breach is now making about playing in Seattle.
Oh, wait, that means it's the win. That means
the Saints are a Central Time Zone team. Exactly.
What am I missing? What's the joke here?
Remember, he said no one's going into Seattle and win.
The Saints. He guaranteed the Seahawks would beat the Saints with Bridgewater in Seattle.
Hey, don't forget too. Like some of these, like Seattle is not going to be nearly as tough to play in if we're doing social distancing crowds. Like if you know instead of 12s, you got 6s.
No, I'm not. You just want to make that terrible joke.
6 feet apart.
I would say play the music because you dunked on yourself, but we're not doing that apparently.
Yeah. So this is weird. This is from Patrick Clarity, who actually wrote it. We're recording this on May 22nd. He said, Dickie V, 1 star. This has been my favorite pod for a year plus. It is the first thing I listen to every morning when I wake up. It's part of my routine. However, I can no longer stand to be yelled at by the dumbass Dick Vitale Dunkaroo clip. At first, this is funny and I got a decent laugh out of it. Now Will is simply beating a dead horse and annoying the crap out of me. See you later, super friends. Okay, so like, this.
Before you yell at this person, what's this person's name?
Patrick Clarity.
Before you yell at Patrick, I think Patrick is actually onto something because if he doesn't like Dick Vitale for whatever reason, the way he announces football games, the last thing I'd want to hear is the most annoying person that I consider the most annoying person yelling every 15 seconds, something that I find extremely annoying. So I understand that. Maybe we need to use it a little more judiciously, but, I would certainly.
Well, on the Friday podcast, I suggest that someone besides Brinson should have control of it so that it does get used judiciously.
That's fair. That's
because
fair
Brinson
enough.
Is just Wild West out there. His trigger finger, you don't know when it's going off. You
or maybe we need like what's the word? A group of dunked on clips to roll through. So we're not doing Dickie V every time.
Yeah. I was about to play it again.
That don't. He's like, oh, they're talking about it. I'll come back and listen now. Then you would play it.
Well, I thought I had it loaded. It got frozen up. My QuickTime closed up, but I was trying to play it after I read the review because Patrick dunked on me with his review. I will say this. If you are a longtime listener who loves the show and makes it part of your routine every day, and then we do something that annoys you, how about you email me? I put my email, my DMs are open.
You can yell at people about putting everything on the podcast. Oh, as opposed to giving you one star. No, did this person give you one star or five stars?
One star. He just said he listens to it every day, and now he's chased off by a Dickie V soundbite?
Yeah, email Brinson or...
Like, you listened to me for a year, and I didn't annoy you enough to run away, and then play Dickie V eight times, and you were like, I'm out, that's it?
That is someone who's just not a Dickie V fan. I mean, Ryan...
Oh!
By the way, this is how Brinson argues with his wife, I'm guessing. Like, Brinson's probably partially responsible, but he turns it around to make it feel like he's the victim no matter what.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Patrick, if you would be so kind as to email Brinson or...
I'm just saying, like, if you got a problem with something on the podcast, I am more than open and willing to listen to it. Like, if you don't like a guest, if you don't like a super friend, like, whatever it is, like, you know, hit me up and let me know.
Yeah, at least the person who hates me, at least they gave us five stars.
Oh.
Speaking of not liking a super friend.
No, hold on, we'll get to that in a second. But first... Oh, I guess breaking news swooping in as we're recording on a Friday.
You get mad at me for doing breaking news 4 days later.
Da-da-da-da-da-da! Joe Flacco, baby!
What about him?
Signing with the Jets.
Ooh.
Ooh, Sam Darnold, job in trouble.
You know I'm in on the Jets now. My man, Joe.
So the question is Joe Flacco's neck okay? I guess it is. Or is he basically Mike Glennon / Nick Foles at this point? What does he bring?
Do you think Joe Flacco has stepped back from his hot take last year that, hey, man, I'm not here to help younger quarterbacks. That's not my job.
Yeah, I think he'll help Sam Darnold. I think he'll be a good backup. Surly, he'll fit with Adam Gase.
They also drafted James Morgan to Breach's point, who was like a lot of people liked him as like the best developmental quarterback. So maybe Joe Flacco can help him.
The biggest loser here is David Fails then.
We'll see. James
if David Fails can't get a job unless Adam Gase is there. He's pretty much been with Adam Gase's entire career.
All right, let's get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And maybe Brian Schottenheimer will be next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. All right, Brian, thanks for taking the time here, man. I hope you're doing well during quarantine. What's the day-to-day life look like for a prominent coach in the NFL during quarantine?
Well, I tell you what, it's definitely a little bit unusual. Still getting a lot of stuff done, which we're excited about. The Zoom meetings, I'm becoming a Zoom expert. I know how to pin video. I know how to become a co-host and things like that. Certainly things I never knew before. It was a challenge, I would say, a little bit in the beginning, just getting used to the technology and stuff. But, we've gotten quite a bit done. We've, been meeting with our players 4 days a week and, about 2 hour meetings and stuff and getting a lot of football covered and, trying to make it as interactive as we, can. And, we've gotten quite a bit done. Of course, it's not like being out on the field and doing the things we should be doing in phase two. We're making the most of it. We always compete. That's kind of the central theme of the program is always compete, and we're doing that, we think, with the best of them in the league circles.
All right, so my theory is that in 2020, and assuming that we get a minimized offseason, which I think, I mean, we're already kind of there in the first place, but hopefully we get full training camps and all that. My theory is that the teams that have continuity at quarterback, offensive coordinator, head coach, and offensive line will be the most successful in 2020. Do you agree with that, or think it's maybe has a little bit of merit? Anything there?
Yeah, I really do. I think certainly most of those aspects I would 100% agree with. I think quite often I've gotten off these Zoom calls and I've thought, wow, to be a new staff, it would certainly be a bit different. You've never met some of these guys. You're trying to implement a new system, a new culture in a lot of cases, and you're doing it like we are here. You're talking and you're face-to-face, but you're really not face-to-face. And so certainly having a guy like Russ be back, me going into year three, obviously with Pete leading the charge, I think teams like us, at least during this period, have a chance to maybe get more done than the new staffs that are trying to get those things put into place.
Another theory I've got working is that you guys in Seattle – have built out your wide receiver core on the premise of attacking vertically via play action with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, you had Philip Dorsett. Even Greg Olsen is really a great route runner off of play action. Am I onto something there is there a conscious effort by the front office and John Schneider to sort of do those things and find guys that fit the sort of system you want to run?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we've kind of grown and we've kind of adapted. I think, you know, it's not a big secret that Russell Wilson's an unbelievable deep ball thrower. Again, I've been blessed to be around some great ones, and he's at the top of the list of guys I have. Just that innate ability to add a little bit of air when he needs to, or to kind of, you know, take something off it when he needs to fit a ball in deep down the field. He's terrific at that. And I think after my first year there, we kind of really looked at ourselves and said, hey, look, you know, the one thing you can't teach is size and speed. And so again, you saw us able to get a combination of both last year with DK in the draft. You saw what he was able to do. Obviously Tyler's extremely fast. You add a guy like Philip Dorsett. That helps. And then again, you mentioned the play action. You know, we're always looking for ways to manipulate the defense with play fakes. Again, Russ has got huge hands and can really, you know, do a great job in the ball handling aspect. So, you're on to something. We love the speed aspect, and then we love using our guys off of play action, trying to get them back in behind the second level of the defense.
Who's more likely? Who's more ripped, Pete Carroll or DK Metcalf?
It's very close. depending on the meal of the day. No, it's. I was actually in the room. Everybody's seen the video, right? The video went viral of DK walking in with his shirt off and Pete being Pete and just saying, "I'm not afraid of you. I'm not taking his shirt off." It was one of the most memorable moments of my combine career. I don't think that I will forget that in the near future, but it was fun because, you know, Pete was quick to do it, but boy, he was quick to put that sucker back on at the end of the day too. He was like, okay, let's get back to work. But what a cool moment that was. But I'd say DK has him by just a hair.
I hope that when I am 68 years old, I look anything remotely as good as Pete Carroll does. He just exudes this like positive. And I think it's funny too, because I've always said this, like people, you know, we were talking a little bit before, like I went to NC State. I saw Russell Wilson here. Obviously followed him through Wisconsin I thought he would succeed when he got to the NFL because he has this, it's almost like it's a optimistic zombie. Like he and Pete Carroll, like the same way. It's like nothing can happen to him that will destroy the aura of positivity that they both have and this like just nonstop enthusiasm. Isn't it amazing how they sort of pair like that together?
It really is amazing, Will. I mean, I think when you look at number one, you know, just talking about Pete and the energy, you mentioned it, you know, I'm not sure. I think he's the second oldest coach in the league, but you know, 68, soon to be, I think 69. The guy has boundless energy. I mean, boundless energy. I can think back to the very first time, my first day on the job, took the job back 2 years ago, whatever it was. And, it was lunch break. We'd been doing a lot of meetings and stuff and we go out to play a basketball game. Right. And I'm going up for a rebound and all of a sudden I feel my legs kind of get taken out from under me. Who is it? It's Pete Carroll boxing me out. Okay. I see how we're going to play this game. But the guy's just, he's amazing. So positive. The culture is so positive. I think that's why players love being around it. And again, when you partner him with a guy like Russ, who has the absolutely the most inner calm or most positive attitude, no matter what the situation of the game is, if we're down 30 with 5 minutes to go, whether we're tied with 2 minutes to go in a game, there's nobody that I've ever been around that believes, regardless of the situation, we will find a way to win. So I think those two guys together, what they've done over time, they can draw to it. And people, I know guys in the huddle or guys in the locker room, regardless of what the situation is, when those two guys talk, they believe it because they've put it on film and they've done it. Whether come from behind victories or big adjustments at halftime, they've both done it. Really two cool guys to be a part of that program.
So Pete Prisco,
Yep, sure do. Yep.
Okay. Would you say Pete is do you think Pete's a decently smart football guy, right?
I would say Pete's got good experience with
that's a polite way of saying he's old. I like it. So Prisco put out his top 100 NFL players list on, I guess by the time people listen to this, maybe it'll be early last week. He finally, for the first time ever since 2012 that he's been doing this, he has Russell Wilson inside the top 10. What on earth, number three, actually. He had him like 25 last year, which is just a slap in the face. Russ has never gotten an MVP vote. There's a stat out there floating around Twitter about that. Do you think Russ gets the credit he deserves around the league? Yes. But like outside, from the outside perception, do you think he's still falls in the underrated in terms of how good he is?
Well, I'll speak to my exposure to him. I mean, when I first got out here, I thought Russ was a good player. I had never obviously, done anything with him in terms of watching him really work. And I thought he was a good player. I thought he was a guy who was going to scramble around and make plays and improvise and all those things that he does. But, when I got here and I saw his ability to throw the football, not just down the field, but accurately, we call it ball placement. He's able to put the ball exactly where you want it, not just to where the guy can catch it, but I mean exactly where you want it. And I was quite honestly blown away and I was surprised. And so again, I think unless you truly love the Seahawks and you watch the Seahawks, I think what he does just comes so naturally and easy that people underestimate him. And I know one thing, I am thrilled and excited about 2020 because I think the chatter about the MVP votes but motivate him. He is ready to work. He's always ready to work, but he's the wrong guy to doubt, man. He is the wrong guy to say, nah, he can't do that, because he will carry a grudge and he will work his ass off to make it go.
He doesn't get the grudge credit that like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers do, because he's so polite and sort of almost, people look at him as like robotic in terms of how he approaches like public speaking. He holds a grudge.
He's got a chip on his shoulder from where he was drafted and what he's done. And I think it's a beautiful thing, and it's a beautiful thing to watch that motivate him. But you're right. People see the persona and they hear him talking about his faith, and he's a great dude. But boy, inside that chest and that, and his rib cage, man, that heart is beating fierce, brother.
I interviewed him, in, I think, 2012 at the Super Bowl, and I brought up Tom O'Brien,
We probably heard some of the same stories.
But like, you saw it in his eyes, and he's like, oh, I was like, okay, there's Russ. There's the Russ that like his teammates know and his coaches know.
Well, again, and I remember he's told a lot of stories. You know, I mean, North Carolina, you know, at first they wanted to be a DB. And so I think he enjoyed going to NC State and being like, hey, listen, you guys are about to pay the price for thinking I was a defensive back and not good enough to play quarterback. So those things like that.
Brian, he never lost to North Carolina in his,
career.
And one of the teams that beat him, like, had no business beating Carolina. And he pulls off this crazy, 2-point, or it's like 4th and 2 at the goal line. He pulls it off and makes this insane throw to beat him at the line. Like, he just wasn't going to lose to Carolina because of that.
Wow. I am not surprised by that. I'm not surprised by that. Well, and as we were talking, I'll take over the interview for a second.
Who's the
quarterback to come out of NC State? There's been a couple good ones.
Yeah, it's tough, man. So, QBU, we got Rivers. I think Rivers is probably the best, in, mainly because Russ has got the whole package.
Start, yeah, 52 starts for Phillip Wright or whatever it was.
Yeah, like. Yeah. And Mike Glennon, my good boy, player. Was there. He took over. He had the unfortunate, you know, he unfortunately had to take over for Russ. And that's just, okay. it's a bad spot to be. Jacoby Brissett, Ryan Finley just came out. You know, you could actually, you know, you could actually make the case for Roman Gabriel if you really want to throw it back into the day.
Wow. I assume you weren't, I know you spent quite a while in school. I assume you weren't there. Roman was there. I assume you weren't there then.
No, I got all of Phil. That's like the unfortunate thing too. You know, you talk about being at Florida, and you know, Spurrier and Werfel, and you backed up Werfel, I believe, right too?
Yeah, I did. Yep. I did. Yep.
And, but like, you get spoiled, man. Like, you know, I get to college. I'm like, so you just, yeah, you know, I get to root for Phillip Rivers my whole life. And, you know, then you realize it's not that easy.
There's no doubt. I tell people all the time, I'm like, yeah, it took a Heisman Trophy winner to keep me on the bench. True. I was not a great player, but I at least can use that. Yeah, I got beat out by a Heisman Trophy winner. That's pretty cool.
Hey, let me, speaking of Rivers, I have a theory, and I think you had left the Chargers. I have another theory. I have lots of dumb theories. But in 2006, you'd left the Chargers, right?
Yeah, that was my first year as a coordinator with the Jets. Yep.
Okay. I think that if Marlon McCree doesn't fumble that ball in the playoffs, that team wins the Super Bowl. Agree or disagree?
Completely 100% agree. We had lost the week before to the Patriots. I was with the Jets. We had lost to the Patriots in the wild card round. Traveled out to San Diego to support, you know, my dad and the team and the squad. And, I mean, heartbreaking turnaround in that game, you know. And again, people don't realize that's really what forced overtime. He fumbled. Troy Brown rips it out, but that was a heck of a football team, man. What were they? 14-2 that year and
14-2 loaded team.
Loaded. LT had his 31 touchdowns or whatever the hell the number was, something crazy. But, I would agree with you. That if they had stayed, they won that game and they stayed healthy, albeit not lose one of their core guys, they had a really great opportunity to win the Super Bowl.
So do you read Twitter at all? Like when are you aware of Seahawks Twitter?
Yeah. I'm aware of Twitter. I've got two teenage kids. My wife's on it. They actually convinced me to get on it last year. And I quite honestly did not realize how much work it requires.
Yeah, it does.
I've since been like, look, I got a lot of things going on. Yes, I am aware of Twitter sphere, I guess is what you call it. But, yes.
Yeah. Well, Seahawks Twitter is a special kind of Twitter. I don't know. Like, they're like a bunch of really – and I mean this, like, politely, but, like, they all seem like they're on drugs. And they all have these weird concepts and all of this. I didn't know, like, if you had seen, like, Cable Thanos. You know about Cable Thanos?
Yep, I do. Yep, I know Cable. Yep. Yeah, he's okay. Got cool memes or whatever you call those.
Yes!
Yeah, he's got memes, right? That's, I don't know why they're called memes, but I know what a meme is.
That was my very disastrous segue from the 2006 Chargers into Seahawks Twitter. Clearly a wide-ranging thing. So you had Rivers for, I guess,
2 years. We drafted him in 04. Traded for him in 04. That was the Eli Manning trade and all that stuff, but had him in 04, 05, and then left in 06, the year he took over, because Breeze left that same year.
How do you think Phil will do in Indianapolis making that transition? Because I think, like, I know it's tough in this offseason to go to a new squad, but to me, I think, like, a guy like Rivers and a guy like Tom Brady, just because of their veteran experience and Rivers with Frank Reich and, knowing that system should be a pretty good transition, right?
Yeah. I actually talked to Phillip a couple of weeks ago and again, he's in a great spot. He feels really good about, the system. Obviously the comfort with Frank is important. It's really a good football team. They've got a nice defense. They've got a great offensive line. I was there for 2 years. T.Y. Hilton's a heck of a player. Jack Doyle's a really good player. You know, we drafted, Marlon, Marlon Mack, late in my last year there, I think, but, I think he's going to a great situation. And again, that's not what we talked about earlier. A new staff, a new head coach, a new scheme. Like he's coming in and he's going to add the things that he wants to add working with Frank and Nick and those guys. But, I think it's a great situation for him and he'll make quite a big impact, I would think. And, that's a tough division anyways.
Yeah. It seems like Chris Ballard has. He's got a real blue collar sensibility about building a roster, you know?
I was around Chris for an entire year and a half, and very impressive, unbelievable worker in terms of talent evaluator. Just wants to really give you what you need as a coaching staff. I love what they do. I love what they do from personnel decisions. I think obviously Frank coming in there with the culture, and it's fun to look back, right? So Josh is going to go and then he doesn't go and people are in an uproar. Again, you talked about Twitter, right? And Twitter takes off and the Colts will never be the same team. And you look at what they've done with Frank coming in. And then I was surprised, not completely, but that Andrew decided to retire. And so, you know, Jacoby's a really good player, but again, I think the familiarity with Philip and Frank and that system makes it an easier fit than most teams that have to get new quarterbacks up to speed.
All right. I will get you out of here on this. You guys like to run the ball. It's what Pete wants to do. And you have a couple good running backs, Chris Carson, and Rashad Penny, both a little banged up, right? I don't know if you talked to them, what their status is. Jamie Eisenberg, our fantasy guy, would kill me if I didn't ask about this. And then I'm curious too, what you think about about DJ Dallas, fourth round, rookie. What are your sort of expectations? Where do these guys stack up and do you have a plan for like distributing carries this coming year and how you want to handle it?
Yeah. Again, I think with the injuries, I mean, I think both guys are doing a great job. They're both, I mean, you don't worry about either guy, Will. I mean, they're both, you know, Chris has been through injuries before. I mean, he got injured his rookie year in Seattle. You know, you talk about a great worker. You talk about a guy that, just, you know, looks the part. And when you see him, you know, running sprints and things, when actually the very first day I was, there, I met Chris and I was like, wow, what a great looking athlete.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Rashad was really, really, really doing well last year when the injuries, kind of struck, you know, but again, I think it happened. If it's going to happen, it happened at a good spot for him because his confidence was an all time low. He ripped off like 140 yards against the Eagles a week or two before, had a great game on a Sunday or Monday night against the Vikings. Just a beautiful play. So his confidence was at an all time high. So he's anxious and excited to get back. I thought what Travis Homer did for us last year.
Yeah, you know, I didn't list Homer. That's my bad. He played well.
And you know, I mean, bringing Marshawn in, that was a lot of fun. I mean, that was really cool, you know, kind of him coming back to the Seahawks. But Travis Homer really did some great, great things for us. And, again, just showing you that, again, it's a position not necessarily of need, but one you're always looking for because it's such a volatile position. You know, you get a guy like DJ Dallas who, again, was a athlete in high school, great player, goes down there, can play some receiver. But you watch this guy play football. And what I love about him, even through the rookie meetings, is the juice that he brings, man. He loves ball. He's got swag about him. I mean, he wants to compete. He's not concerned about who's there. He's just going to go out there and play ball. And, I love guys like that. So, again, at some point we're going to get back out there and roll the ball out there and have some fun. But, we feel good about that position. And, I'm excited to see these guys get back and get on the grass.
By the way, 7 yards a carry for Rashad Penny over those two games at Philly. At Philly and then Minnesota, I mean, two critical wins for getting in the playoffs too. Shame because you're right. He was like starting to come on.
Well, and here's the thing I would say. And if you ask Rashad, he'd say the same thing. Really what we noticed, Will, was a difference in his approach to practice and preparation. Mm. So again, for all the young players that are out there, you know, there's a learning curve, right? There is. I mean, you come in the NFL and you're coming from San Diego State or Florida. It doesn't matter. There's a learning curve, but he learned that it's how you practice. It's how you prepare in the meetings that allows you to go and play with a clear mind and just play football. And, the guy's a hell of a football player and he showed that in those couple games. And, I have no question. He'll get back to that level at some point.
All right. I lied. I got one more quick one for you. So you have been around, Debo, my producer picked out the full list of quarterbacks not the full list, but the cream of the crop list of quarterbacks you've been around. I will exclude, Russell Wilson from this because he's your current one and that would be your obvious answer. Who's the best quarterback you've worked with non-Russell Wilson division, throughout your career?
Well, you know, I'm not going to answer that question because I have a very, very good relationship with all these guys.
I know.
But I will say this. Again, I think it was really cool to watch Philip, and Drew compete. It was awesome to watch Drew go from being a guy that got benched in our second year there. We replaced him with Doug Flutie. I can still remember him sitting on the sidelines, and Will, he never took his helmet off, ever. Mm. So the game was going on, and he was just standing there with his chin strap buckled, ready to go in. You know, to watch he and Phillip compete was amazing. You know, had some really great years, in with the Jets. I mean, Chad Pennington, what a great field general. What a, just a great leader. He was awesome. The Favre year was undeniably maybe my most enjoyable, fun, crazy year, just because we got him after preseason game one or two, and he had never been involved in our system, and we had to transition and stuff. And then, you know, then Sanchez comes in. We have a bunch of success. We go to championship game after championship game. St. Louis, Sam Bradford to this day is maybe one of the best passers, pure passers I've ever been around. And if I think if he stays healthy, he's got, you know, he's got, some amazing numbers that he would have, done. And then obviously, after that, let's see, we go to, Indy. And then you got Andrew, who's an unbelievable player, great. Unbelievable football smarts, you know, Jacoby yeah. did a nice job. And so I've been really, really blessed. And, but each one had different things that I remember about them. But they all won and prepared a different way. And that's been something that's been cool for me to take with me other places that I've been.
That's a very diplomatic answer, but an accurate one.
Yeah, I gave you guys a little bit of insight into each. I mean, that'd be like picking between my kids saying, oh, I like Sutton more than Savannah or Savannah more than Sutton. I can't.
Yeah, you cannot pick a kid right now in quarantine, because then you got more like the problem at my house right now. We've got these quarantine elves that sneak into my house and drink all my red wine every night.
Really?
I don't know how they get in here. I can't stop them every night. It's like the wine's just disappearing. It's wild.
Well, my kids are responsible for keeping the dogs from barking when I'm Zooming with 51 players, you know. Yeah. If I pick one versus the other, all of a sudden the dogs are going to be barking. I'll get nothing done.
Exactly. All right, Brian. I appreciate the time, man. This is a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing the Seahawks this year, and be safe this all season. And take care, man.
Sounds good. Thanks, Will. Appreciate it, buddy.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it all on fire. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got
it. Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.